get to know them a little bit. You make small talk. Well, what are you going to do when you get out? Well, I'm going to go get a job. And I was like, oof. I wouldn't say it to them because, you know, you don't want to discourage anybody. But I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's going to be hard to do if you have a record. And that's quite literally the genesis of Inmates to Entrepreneurs. At that time, I thought, well, instead of trying to get a job, the system's not working for you. Go around the system and start your own job and start your own business.
Welcome to Expressive Espresso.
Today is about the power of you.
Anytime I'm scared of something, I feel impelled to attack it.
Expressive Espresso is the coffee shop for leaders like you.
If you don't fail, you're not even trying.
Expand your knowledge about personal development.
Anything that starts with I don't want to work is already a problem.
Entrepreneurship.
Invest in things that you understand.
And leadership.
You will change the world.
This is Expressive Espresso with Alexis DeAngicoli.
When you listen to the Drake song, Started From the Bottom, you will process it in your own way because although you're listening to it in his voice, you're also processing it from your bottom. And that bottom may come from a divorce. It may come from a separation or a transition from high school to college. Or it can come from coming back home from jail from a long sentence. And so I'm excited today because I'm here with Brian Hamilton, who is the founder of Inmates to Entrepreneurs. To learn from where we are now, we have to start with history. I recently noticed that you sold your fintech company, SageWorks. I wanted to ask you, what was your aha moment for becoming the co-founder of SageWorks? And also, what made you decide to sell it recently?
Thank you, Alexis. It's wonderful to be here. I guess the first thing I'd say is start with the sold part. In the last 5 years of the company's existence, at least while I was running it, you know, as a company gets bigger, there's just a lot more scaling issues, HR issues, legal issues, administrative issues that, you know, are really important, but definitely not important to a typical entrepreneur, i.e. me. So I sold it because I really, frankly, just stopped liking my job. One of the advantages of being an entrepreneur is you usually like what you're doing. And I certainly like customers and I like building products. But as we got bigger, less and less of my time was on that stuff and more on sort of running a company. I didn't have one sort of Damascus moment in starting SageWorks in terms of your first question on the aha moment. I knew that people couldn't understand financial information, and I had been running another business that I sold. Basically, I was, I think, about 34, 35, and I was just looking for something new to do, and I had seen through my collective experiences that people did not understand financial numbers. So my partner and I, Sarah Torville, developed an expert system to convert financial numbers into plain language that people would understand. So it was basically a new adventure for me.
Can you give me an example of how you basically got the financial numbers and exported it to a story, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me answer the question directly, and then I'll give you context. And I don't like using algorithms. It makes it sound too complicated. But what we really did was combine financial numbers in sequences together that if you take them together – tell a story of what's going on in a business. So, for example, you could say you're 5'6" and African American, and you are from Greensboro. And those are pieces of information. Individually, they mean something, right? But they don't mean much. I mean, if you're from Greensboro, that means you're from Greensboro. But if we could combine those pieces of information, 5'6", African American, from Greensboro, doing podcasts, whatever, and you combine them. Once we get a lot of information in a string, we can tell a story as to not fully who you are, but a little bit about who you are. Same thing with a company. So we take financial numbers and we combine them, and then we're able to tell a story of that company. That's how the technology worked.
And does that go along with the two patents that you currently have?
Yeah, the first patent. The first patent is like literally that, which is a patent on combining financial numbers to convert those numbers into a very plain language story that anybody would understand.
And what about the second patent?
I think the second patent was on some type of Excel methodology. I don't think we were really able to monetize that one as well. It's really not the basis of the company. The basis of the company was the first patent.
During this time, while you were co-founder of SageWorks, did you also have the Inmates to Entrepreneurs program as well?
I actually started Inmates to Entrepreneurs well before SageWorks. It goes back to 1992. A friend of mine, Reverend Robert Harris, would do ministry work at prisons. And I had never been in a prison, you know, but he was just a friend of mine. And we just became really good friends. I'm an Irish Catholic from Connecticut, and he's a Baptist minister from Oxford, North Carolina. Yeah, I don't know how these things happen, but we just became really good friends. And he would do ministry work at the prisons, and he just took me along. And so, you go into the first prison, it's like, wow, it's really, you learn a lot quickly. I mean, I still learn when I go to prisons about the prison system, but you learn a lot. But one of the striking things for me is when I went, you meet people there, and you get to know them a little bit. You make small talk. Well, what are you going to do when you get out? Well, I'm going to go get a job. And I was like, oof. I wouldn't say it to them because, you know, you wanted to discourage anybody. But I remember thinking to myself, well, that's going to be hard to do if you have a record. And that's quite literally the genesis of Inmates to Entrepreneurs. At that time, I thought, well, instead of trying to get a job, the system's not working for you. Go around this system and start your own job and start your own business. And I know we're going to talk about it a little bit today. But, that was 26 years ago. I was like 29, 28 years old. I can't remember. And I've taught in hundreds of prisons and to thousands of people. But actually, the problem with recidivism is actually as great as it was then, even though there's been more consciousness, national consciousness. I know that's why you're here today, around the problem. The problem is really profound. I think it's like 67% of the people who come out of prison will go back. And frankly, I'm amazed it's not higher, honestly. If you look at the roadblocks that they've got in getting jobs or getting back into society. So, but in answer to your question, it started back in 92 as me and Reverend Harris just hanging out. And then we would go to the prisons and teach courses on how to start businesses.
Speaking of roadblocks, I was just about to say that when they come out, you know, inmates, they have a lot of roadblocks. I have a personal family member of mine who had that roadblock as well. And he now has his own business as well as a corporate job. But I understand as far as from a corporate standpoint that it's a big risk to invest in a person, you know, like that with that history. What kind of businesses do you teach the inmates to start?
That's another great question, an important one. So before I answer that, we at our organization are believers in low capital businesses. We don't want to create a business where you got to go out and get a loan for $20,000 or an equity investment for $100,000 because we know that's going to be really hard for people. So we believe in low capital businesses, lawn services, tree cutting, car detailing, home cleaning, roof cement businesses where you patch roofs and things that you could start with less than $500. And we're really passionate about that because, again, when I was starting out, you know, I mean, I always say when I'm in prison, I know that some people in prison have worse background than I had. But I know there's people who have better ones. I'm from a background of economic scarcity. I couldn't go to my parents and say, give me $2,000 to start a business. They wouldn't have $2. So we're big believers in low capital service businesses that you can start with little capital. And almost all of our mentors have done that. I did that. And so we really know that. Just how do you get started in the American dream with very little capital? And by the way, I know we might get to it, so I don't want to go off script here too much. But one of the reasons that we care about what we're doing is if you look at society historically in our country, any disadvantaged, quote, disadvantaged group, I don't really like the term, but let's just use it. How do you get up the socioeconomic ladder? Well, there's two ways you do it. you get an education, which is the safest way to do it, right? Or you become an entrepreneur. If you look at the people in prison and you look at their backgrounds, not true for everyone, by the way, but most of them don't have the benefit of a stable home and having a good education. So is this fair? I mean, you know, in other words, in this country, we can't guarantee results. We don't want a country that guarantees results, but we would love a country where there's equal opportunity. So if you look at the demographics of the people in prison, it's not uniformly true. They're not all of color. They're not all white folks. They're not, but there are really compelling data sets that show that they come from ACEs backgrounds, adverse childhood experience backgrounds. I mean, it's stuff that a lot of people just don't have to deal with. And that's why we want to encourage people to start low capital businesses. And we really teach them how to do that, because to get out of the system, well, for a lot of them, the education route's not there, you know. You probably know all this, but I mean, it's amazing. In North Carolina, there's two North Carolinas. Now, everybody always says this about their states, like, well, there's two Americas. No. In North Carolina, there's distinctly two North Carolinas, and it's profound. Guys like me, I ran a tech company. Now, I did not have I had a pretty adverse background, but I mean, I'm learning. You know, I learn this stuff every day, right? You know, if you're born in poverty in this state, there's only a 3% chance you're going to get out of that. Three out of 100. I'm glad no one told me that when I was a kid, because I never would have tried.
Right.
So if you're born in poverty, you got 97% chance you're going to stay there. Now, do we blame all those people? See, I had a father in my home. We didn't have a lot of economic resources at all, you know. But I had someone coach me, so I was at an advantage. But in North Carolina, there's really two distinct North Carolinas. And I don't want to even break that down, urban versus not urban. It's really Raleigh, Wilmington, Greensboro. There's pockets of poverty there, right? Mm-hmm. But there's pockets of poverty in those areas, but there's also large pockets of poverty or economic scarcity or just adverse backgrounds outside of those areas. And then you got people like me, you know, who maybe I was able to climb up or whatever, but you got people with a lot of resources, and the difference is profound. So, you know, one of the big things we're trying to do is to level the playing field. And I've got no problem with education. I was the first one in my family to go to college. I mean, I get that. I think that's wonderful. But we know that people in prison did not have that advantage. And we know a lot of young people don't have that advantage. So let's make them entrepreneurs if they want to be, and give them a chance up the ladder without having the education, you know.
So going from that, what are some of the success stories that you can share with the audience from your program?
Yeah, I can tell you too that we've had a fair number of them, but I'll tell you too that really inspire me. One, I'm going to give his name. I probably shouldn't do this, but I don't think he cares actually. He's like me. He's a pretty loose guy on this level. But his name is Scott Jennings. Apparently, I met him when I was teaching one of the Inmates to Entrepreneurs courses. I met him when he was in prison. I think he was at Orange Correctional. I don't remember. But I don't really remember meeting him. But I was teaching a course there. And when he got out, he contacted me. And he said, hey, I believe in what you're doing, and I had to get involved. And he got involved with me a little bit at that point. But I love Scott's story because he was in prison. He started his own business. I take no credit for that. But he started his own business. He's a successful business owner. But then he got involved in our program. He's helping. Mm-hmm. And now he's on our board. Oh. So he's come full cycle. I love that story because it's inspiring. And, you know, a lot of times we have a lot of failures. I'm not, quote, failures. We can't expect everybody to start a business. So I want to make that point clear too. Not everybody's going to be able to do it. And another one is a lady, Nakia. I won't give her last name, but I really love her because – now, I've been working with her personally maybe for 2 or 3 years, and she has an event planning business. And she just had a lot of personal things happen, or she's a single mom and, you know, there's problems paying the bills or having a job and you get the kids. And I'm like, ugh, it was going on for like 2 years. And I got to say, not that I didn't believe in her, but I was like, gosh, how are you going to pull out of this? Because again, you got all these personal things on you, right? You know what I'm saying? It's one of the things, and again, I don't want to get on a soapbox, that people don't understand about economic scarcity is it doesn't mean economic scarcity. It means economic scarcity. It means like, you know, you're probably a little short with your kids because you're stressed out. You might not have a great education. You don't have a great network, right? You don't have this huge network. When I started business, I couldn't go to my uncle and borrow money. But they didn't have any money. So economic scarcity is not just about, oh, I don't have money. It's a lot of stuff. So I love her story because I met with her on and off for like 2 years. And I have to be honest, it's not that I didn't believe in her, but I was like, man, we're not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. Making a long story short, at the end, she got a couple of customers and she got a job and she sort of pulled out of it. It's wonderful. So it's like one of these situations where there's like a straight line and you don't feel like you're getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, good things happen. So I really like that one.
Well, I say you can't explain the successes without the failures. So is there a failure that you can share with us?
No, but it's not because I'm not answering your question. It's more that I would say the failures in our business almost are always the same. Well, are all really fall into a category. It's like someone tries to be an entrepreneur and then it's just not for them. You know what I mean? They try it for a while. And so the pattern's very similar. You know, they just do it. Of course, a lot of people don't try. So that's the one that bothers me the most. I know your question was really about a specific, but I can't think of one of those. I what bums me out the most in life is that people go through the course, they come to us, and they don't try. And that really bums me out. Because I would rather try something and fail, you know, than just never try at all. Yeah, you can learn from it. But also, if you don't try, you don't know. See, I always want to know the answer, right? I want to know that answer. And, but, you know, people have things that come up in their lives, whatever. But I would say the biggest failure is people don't even try.
How do you keep the inmates, I guess, engaged throughout that? Since you can see that some of them are not trying, but I guess you also have a portion that really want to do this. How do you keep them engaged?
Yeah, it goes to something fundamental that I've been thinking about for 30 years. This is a really global answer, but I got to answer it this way because it goes to something global. Okay. And it just doesn't just go to people who have been judicially involved. It's really all of us. If people come to us and they've got the desire, all we're doing is guiding it. And so the answer is, do we keep them engaged? We do, but I want to be humble about the real impact we have, because my real view is the people who do pretty well are motivated and they've hit some wall in their lives, you know, or something happened to them where now they want some serious change. And at that point, of course, anything's possible. This is a false claim because I can't validate it, right, totally. But we don't know anybody who's been involved with our program who went back to prison. So I'm like, wow. Now, I'm sure there are people who have, but we don't know of anybody. So one of the nice things about our program is even if they take our courses or come to engage with us, that alone shows they're ready for change. So what's success for us? People say, how many businesses have you started? Well, that's interesting to me, but I'm more interested in how many people have touched your program and have not gone back to prison? Because that's really what we're solving for, you know?
So are you familiar, I guess, with the percent rate of the men and women who join your program and become entrepreneurs and create a living? Do you know that percent rate at all?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to give some estimates. So first, for years, because it's 26 years, right? For the first 15 or 16 years, I went to prison and taught courses. And I didn't track anybody. I would just show up like Jesus in a village and just go teach people, you know, whatever. not that I'm Jesus, because I'm not. But you know what I'm saying? Like I would just show up, right? In the last 2 or 3 years, we've done a better job tracking. So for courses outside of prison, we find that we've got about a 40% of graduation rate, and about half of those people start businesses. That's pretty good, actually. I'm amazed it's that high, frankly, you know. And I guess that's one thing that I would say to people is like, I don't want to – what I'm passionate about is giving people opportunities to be a plumber, opportunities to go to college, opportunities to better yourself. I don't want to make it seem like everybody is going to come through our program and be an entrepreneur. That's not true. But at least it's another option that's available to people, and that's kind of what we're trying to do. Our, quote, success rate would be low. But, you know, success rate with any entrepreneurship program should be low, frankly, because it's not for everybody, you know.
So in closing, would you say entrepreneurship is the answer, or would you say there's a different answer as far as – because from what I'm gathering – and like you described, you said that you more than you guide people and you're like a mentor, a coach for those who didn't have it. So I guess going back, would you say entrepreneurship is the answer?
Yeah, it's a good way to end. This is what I think. I think it's an answer for some people. But really, that comes from something to me that's more important. It's an answer for some people that's not available to people right now. So again, in the country... You know, I don't want to guarantee your success. I mean, I don't think that's society's obligation, but it is society's obligation to give you an opportunity. And right now, there are people who are locked out of opportunities. The barriers of coming back out of prison and getting your life squared away are massive. They are massive. I'm amazed that it's only 67% of the people that go back to prison. What do you do if you can't get a job? And what's going to happen with you? Really, let's just get real. That's number one. If you don't have a place to live and you can't get a job, is it the answer? I think it's the answer for some people. But it's an answer that's not even available to some people now. Like when I was a kid in my neighborhood, there were no entrepreneurs. I didn't even know what it was. I still don't really know what it is. It's like a French word. But there weren't those people around. I didn't have a reference group. So our job at the foundation and inmates specifically say, hey, here's something available to you that you haven't thought about. Are you an entrepreneur? I don't know, but you could try and find out.
And with your other programs, like I've seen that you have Youth for Entrepreneurs or Entrepreneurs Youth and other things like that. What's your mission as far as with that, or what are your goals that you can share with us?
I'm glad you actually asked, because when I was running Sagebrush, I didn't have time, right? Mm-hmm. What we want to do is get to kids before the cement has dried, mm-hmm. You know, that you can still shape them a little bit, you know. The middle school kids are between, I think, like 9 and 12 or something like that, in that range. The cement is not fully formed. And so it's always bothered me that in the inmates program, we're getting them when they're adults. Not to say they can't change. Mm-hmm. But harder. So I'm trying to, well, not we're trying, we are teaching courses now at middle schools to let people know, hey, just get it in their heads that, sure, do well in school. I'm not saying don't do well in school, even though we know, you know, there's a fair number of them are not going to do well in school. I mean, they're not going to do well in school if they go home and they can't eat, or mom and dad are fighting every night or whatever. This is a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. So put in their head that, hey, there's this thing called entrepreneurism, and put that in their head. So maybe later on they'll think, well, you know, I remember that thing I learned when I was in middle school. And I really want to get to people before they get into trouble with the law or they don't do well in life. I'm really super passionate about that, because with the inmates program, we're always catching them sort of after the fact, you know.
Does that go with their, I've seen your billboards, Entrepreneurship for All. Does that tie in?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Let's make it available. And it's kind of funny. We get these, we get people to email in. Well, you know, I haven't been in prison. I'm not in the military and I'm not a kid. And I'm like, well, look, I have sons And I, of course, I love my sons most times, and not always they drive me crazy. But they have had advantages, so it's fine. God loves them. But we really want to get to people. When we say entrepreneurship for all, it's of course entrepreneurship for all, but especially to those people who maybe don't have equal opportunity. So that's where we're focused. And there's lots of people like that, you know.
Another in closing, do you plan on opening, I guess, another software company?
Yeah, never.
Never?
Well, never's a long time.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't want to say never, but oh my goodness. I didn't sleep for 20 years running SageWorks, so it's been really great in the last 6 months to sleep and you know, get some rest and be like calm and everything. So I can't see it that I'm going to start another company now.
For 2019, what are your plans for your foundation? Yeah.
So we want to get to a lot of middle schools and get the kids learning about being an entrepreneur. And I love the kids, by the way. They ask you anything. It's really a riot, actually. It's fun. We want to go national with the inmates program. We're doing a sort of a country tour. I don't know what you'd call it, like these one-day seminars. We had one in New York City. We got one in Atlanta in late January. Then we got one in D.C. during Second Chances Week or whatever that is in D.C., whatever they have going. And so we're doing a national tour. We're also going to put our program online, putting a lot of resources into developing a great online program. Because that's this way you can reach lots of people. You reach people in Tulsa, Akron, Ohio, wherever. So those are some of the big goals. And the truth is we're still learning. I mean, and it's funny. I've been doing this 26 years, but we're a 26-year-old startup. Because before it was like all volunteer. And now it's like serious. We're scaling it. So we're learning, you know.
So wrapping up that great interview that I had with Brian Hamilton, the founder of the Brian Hamilton Foundation and also Inmates to Entrepreneurs, what can we say that we learned today? Basically, we learned that there is help out there. And all we have to do really is we just have to search for it. Everybody can't be entrepreneurs at first, and that's totally fine. But if you find yourself in a situation where you may have did time, there's other resources out there to help you with that business. Thank you for tuning in again today. You can find Inmates to Entrepreneurs at the Brian Hamilton Foundation, which is brianhamilton.org/inmates-to-entrepreneurs. Also, you can tune in to Expressive Espresso at www.sipthepodcast.com. Until we meet again, I hope you have a great week. And we will also go back to Wednesday postings.